Today's guest is Jill McCarthy, also known as the Geeky Grandma. She has a podcast and she is so inspiring to talk to. I tell you, she will motivate you. She'll make you feel like you are not doing enough. But she is an ex-elementary school teacher. She was an elementary school teacher for 25 years. She tells her story about what happened and why she transitioned. She actually did retire from that profession, but she always had the side love of computers. And she is now a podcast host. She actually sat on it for 14 years. She'll talk about that. But she talked about how she suppressed who she really was for so many years, and she sought help, and she finally is speaking her truth and being her authentic self. And it was just a delightful 30, 40 minutes of a conversation. And she's got a couple of really great quotes she shares. And I think as a grandma like me, we really connected, and as a definitely somebody who has gone above and beyond anything that would be expected of her, and really making kind of being a force in the world, I just love it. So anyways, with no further ado, let's get to Jill's interview now. Hi, I'm Laurie Wright, also known as Not Your Average Grandma. I created this podcast as a place to go for midlife inspiration. If you are in a stage where you believe the best is behind you, it is my hope that one of these episodes will ignite a long suppressed or unrealized desire, and you will see the potential within yourself just waiting to be tapped so you can do amazing things with the time you have left. I want you to stop seeing your age as a limitation and start seeing it as your superpower. You have years of experience and value that your younger you never had. So it's time to lean into that and use it to fuel your future. No more letting age hold you back from the pursuit of a more passion-filled life. The more passionate we are, the better the world will be. So stop settling for average, put your AirPods in, and let this episode inspire you to take the first step in transforming your mind, body, and soul. Welcome to another episode of Not Your Average Lives. And I was just telling my guest, I'm feeling a little like rusty because I have batched so many and I was in my launch and now I'm like starting, feel like I haven't done an interview for a while. So welcome to the program, Jill McCarthy.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yes. And I have to share because we had some technical issues and I just want you to know that these grandmas can figure it out.
Yeah.
Yes. So, but Jill has a podcast too, and we met on Instagram. She actually reached out to me and asked me to be on her podcast. And I want to give that a plug. It's called The Geeky Grandma with an Encouraging Nudge.
Right.
So she's going to talk about that. So she's a podcaster, and I love that people do podcasts because it's such an easy thing to do. And anybody can chit chat if they're like me. I can always find something to talk about. So yeah, so you reached out to me and I did that. And I it's like two episodes ago. So by the time this airs, you know, it's just, if you go to her podcast, it says Not Your Average Grandma talking to Not Your Average Grandma. Yeah. So anyways, yeah. So we're going to talk about you today.
All right.
Yes, because you are inspiring. I think you're very inspiring. Jill is 67. She's a mom of four sons. My daughter has four kids, and two are boys and two are girls. I think she would probably like, four Feel boys over. Is a lot. That's a lot of milk that's drank in the
absolutely.
The house. Yeah. 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 I think six grandkids.
Yep, three and three. So yes.
Oh, yeah. So we have, I have six too. So yeah. So you are in this world of doing what you love.
And yes.
Yes. And you were started as an elementary school teacher.
Absolutely. 25 years.
Yeah. So I'd love for you to share, first of all, like, where did you come up with the Geeky Grandma? Because when I hear that, I think you might be techie. So geeky also might mean like a little bit nerdy. So what does that mean? And then, yeah. And then tell us kind of what made you stop teaching. And I don't know how old your podcast is, but like, what made you want to do a podcast and how do you really serve? What do you do now other than you know, you teach in some way probably, but yeah. So just give us a little background on you.
Okay. Geeky, I am guilty on both parts, both the tech part and the kind of nerdy part, but it's kind of a long story, but make it real short. I started college as a math major. The last course I took, they said, we'll give you a C if you don't come back. So that wasn't it, but they showed me the computer, the school's one computer they were going to use the next year in that math class. And I guess it left me hungry for like 20 years. And my husband's in construction and he swapped a septic system for a computer. And I sat down to the computer the very first time and my fingers told me what to do. They just were a natural fit. They understood how to go to pull down menus. Never done it before in my life, but I had waited 20 years anticipating it, setting up my husband's construction business spreadsheets on paper. So I knew I could do that. And I just fell in love with that. And
so let me back up. So you got this exposure to a computer in college.
Right.
But you didn't never had your own computer, it sounds like.
No.
Until fast forward 20 years, you're saying?
Right.
Wow.
So I was really waiting for it, and I kind of got the idea of it being rows and columns kind of thing. I taught myself on Excel, first of all.
Yeah, and I remember Lotus. Do you remember? That's the first application that had a menu that I learned on.
I skipped the Lotus. I came in after that, but I got a little manual and every page had its own separate directions that were complete in their own right. And I'd go read a page and I'd come back and I'd read a page and I'd come back. And when I was raising those four kids, why many of my colleagues were already on full-time jobs, I learned the skills, the computer skills, and I practiced on my husband's business so that by the time I got to school, I actually knew more about computers than they did, even though they'd had a few Lotus classes along the way. And I had so much time to practice on it. It just came very naturally to me. And
what grade did you teach?
I taught second grade for 20 of those years, and it's a nice grade, I like to say, in that they're broken in, but they're not wise guys yet. So that was a good fit for me.
My second grade teacher would read to us, and she was not very nice because she was also a lunch monitor, and she forced me to eat like vegetables. So that was I did not like that teacher, but I do remember the one good thing about her is she had a wonderful Piglet voice. So I loved Piglet, and she would talk in this Piglet voice. Isn't that funny? The things we remember, just two extremes about her. She was not a nice teacher. I remember my dad and her had a conference, and my dad was an assistant principal, and my parents were normally kind of like, you know, back to the school and the teacher, and you know, the teacher's right. But she was so mean to me for some reason. I think I bit my fingernails. And so then she like gave me a bad grade for that, whatever a bad grade is. And, you know, in second grade, I think you get numbers. They had habits. And if you had, you're good, then you got a one. If you're bad, I got a three. And so, anyways, we get back to you and your experience. Enough about me. So you were doing this teaching thing. And then at some point,
about 10 years in, all of a sudden, I realized it wasn't a good fit for me. I could do the teaching, and as far as grades go, I had as good as they were going to get. But my heart was just kind of longing to do a little more. I was very active in church. And of course, the church part of me had to go, you know, in my locker, and I couldn't bring it out in the daytime. And that was frustrating to me. And when you have four kids and they're kind of like all dive bombing on you, and you're getting out 20 dive bombing on you, and I live 3 minutes away from school, you know, it was hard to get away from that constant. When I retired, I felt like a piglet, like a mother sow with 20 piglets all leeching onto me. And it just didn't fit. And what happened is around that 10-year mark, I ended up starting doing women's retreats. And I absolutely fell in love with it. I took my geeky skills, which then I had taken on to graphic art kind of things, and I'd make pamphlets for these retreats and flyers, and I could create all the lessons I wanted to teach from the, I had the teaching experience, I just changed the subject matter, and I fell in love with it. And
yeah, it's funny you should say that, because I think you know, you changed the age also of the students.
Right.
Because I think I was going to be a teacher, and then I taught seventh grade for like a 9-month grading period, and I hated it. I hated it. So I quit my teaching. I ended up not finishing college because I was like, well, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to waste my time for another year getting a degree I'm not going to use. And so, but then I got into corporate world and training people, adults, and I loved that. And so it's kind of interesting, because just sometimes what we think we love and what is our gift, sometimes it's still that, but it's just different.
What happened, one of the other things that happened that made me change my mind was I ended up taking an adult ed computer course, and the guy starts teaching, and I says, I know that. Why am I in this class? So the next semester, I taught the computer class. And I'll tell you, I came out of there that night, and the sky was dark, and it was a clear night with all the stars there. I just felt like Rocky. I felt like on top of the world, because there were like the school secretary was in the class. And the next day, she used the skill I taught her in her work. You know, the district superintendent ended up taking my class, and along with the business manager of the school, one of my later classes I taught, you know, and I could see the results faster, I think was part of it. And I was teaching something I loved. I mean, I can teach a math lesson and kind of make it look like a magic trick, a little sleight of hand in it. But after a while, that got old for me. And yet the computer, I was excited. I even did one-on-one tutoring. I had a lady in her 80s I was teaching. And I knew when she was going to get excited. I knew how to teach it in a way that would thrill her and also take care of her fears. And that was a thing I was really good at, was I could walk them through that safely. And
that's what happened. Definitely a servant when it comes to that. So
yeah, they're still teaching, but just in different subjects and different people. And I just kept working. I did about 10 retreats around that year, 2000, a little before, a little after. And then it was kind of like, put your head down and get out of here as fast as you can. And I got a break to be able to get out at 55 with, I had only 25 years in. Usually you need 30. And I had a 1-year window of time, actually 3-month window of time to go in on that. And I was
Tell me about your, when did you decide to do the podcast? How long has that been running? And I always like to say, I feel like people either have a book in them or they have a topic that they love to talk about. And right. If you don't like to write, which not everybody likes to write, and writing a book can be quite an arduous process, you probably like to talk. You can do a podcast or a book. What do you want to do?
Well, the writing came a little more naturally. I started the podcast almost 2 years ago. But when I've been retired 12 years, and I literally bought a podcasting microphone before I retired from school. So it was like 14 or 15 years ago. I had a book about
it. You would have been one of the early people if you hadn't sat on it. I sat on it for 3 years.
I had a book that I kept opening it up and it'd say RSS feed. Okay. I don't know what an RSS feed is, but by the time I actually did it, it was a lot easier than the book I said. And I'm a person that had to work a long time to get my voice back. That was one of the things that I've reclaimed. And personal development I've been really studying it for practically 50 years.
So tell me what that means to you, get your voice back.
Oh,
I mean, you didn't like, I mean, you didn't lose your ability to speak, right?
No, I didn't, but I have an extremely sensitive nervous system. And I end up finding out I'm an HSP and an empath and all of those kind of things. And what I would had was whenever I got afraid or nervous, I stuffed it into my bones and into my muscles and into my nerves. And I literally just did that for probably 35 years, just constantly. And I literally gnarled my whole system up, and including a lot of it went in my throat. When I was in school, I would get laryngitis by the first Friday of school. And I ended up having to use the Hall's cough drop in my mouth for forever, so much that I ended up losing my upper back teeth, because that's where I would hide it so I could still talk. And, you know, I have a melancholy, kind of a quiet nature. So speaking up doesn't come naturally. That's kind of funny why I ended up getting the gift of doing retreats. You wouldn't have thought that of me. Matter of fact, some people looked at my flyers and said, you know, no way would you do that. Then when I got up there, they said, oh, I guess you can. And I've worked easily 30 years with a therapist. I've used a network chiropractor. I've used physical therapy. On top of all of the reading and podcasts and everything else webinars that I've heard over the years. And I literally have gotten my voice back and fuller over, you know, inch by inch. But if there was a slower way to do it, I'm sure I would have found it. But I can feel the muscles one at a time unwind.
Yeah, and you're getting aligned with who you really are.
Who I really am.
You're hiding yourself. Yeah. Authentic Jill is coming out. Yay. Yeah. So are you not using Hall's cough drops anymore?
No, don't need them anymore.
Yay. I don't want to lose any more teeth.
No, of course not. But, you know, I can feel it when it tightens up, but I know what it is. And I know some things that work on me getting it back. And so I'm so much more tuned into my body. One time when I started with my third therapist, she said I was dissociated and that I just like wasn't even really in my body. And she, between her and the chiropractor, I would go to her in the morning and then the chiropractor right after. We'd loosen up the ideas in therapy, and then physically he would loosen it up right afterwards. And so it's been a real hand in glove kind of thing. And
that's awesome. I love the you know, what you're doing and talking about with the chiropractor. I never actually used a chiropractor until I was like in my 50s, and it was just by total accident. Her husband and my husband played rugby together, and she saw me walking with a limp, and so she approached me and said, you know, you should come in, let me look at you. But I didn't realize of the connection between the brain stem, like the brain and the fluid that flows down your back.
Right.
And when you're not adjusted right and there's a pinch there, you actually are blocking that communication from your brain to your
right.
body. Yeah.
We've worked so much. I could talk on that all day, but really what right now we're even working on the back of my head. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing, but they've tuned me so in that I can tell them exactly where they need to look. And, you know, I would do EMDR with the therapist, and that a lot of that is, where do you feel this in your body? And, you know, when you practice it for a long time, it's a lot easier to do that. And
I had my chiropractor on as a guest a long time ago, actually. And so, and I just had a chiropractor appointment on Tuesday. So I now go for like every 6 weeks I go. But I am going to put in the show notes a link to that podcast, because that would be good for people if they're like,
right.
What does a chiropractor actually do? And it's a really good conversation. She believes and has a lot of marketing materials on the 100-year life. So it's all about teaching people how to live past 100 in a vital, healthy, active way. So, all right, so let's get back to you. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you is who, because you talked about personal development and doing it for so long and that you're really an avid follower of, you know, like you shared a couple quotes, which we'll get to in a second that I love. And when you submitted to me your bio. So who, if you're have been into the personal development space, who has inspired you the most?
I'm going to say a name that isn't, I'm sure, on any of the book rosters anywhere, but I had a pastor friend who I met right after I had a hysterectomy. And she was so naturally loving and giving and a fantastic hugger. And from my kind of teaching background, I brought some of that over to my chiropractor and therapist. I added that kinesthetic piece, and that's what I needed to get it to connect with me. And actually, the two of them were working, but until they added the third piece that I had, of all people, to give. And she was so genuine and took the time to listen to me. I'm sure I was way more than a nuisance and called way more than anybody should have. But she took the time. She believed in me. She actually did a practice retreat so that, because I told her my background, how I wanted to spend it, do a thing with women and do it an overnight thing. And at first she put on a couple of women's tees and so I could meet the ladies. And then she did a practice one. And then the next year I did one. And I had her as my speaker a couple of times. But then I got doing more and more of it. And she just listened and she gave me the opportunity and was so supportive. I can remember one of the first things I did was I asked, could I play a song for the Sunday morning service? And she said, yeah. And I says, well, it isn't a very spiritual song. The one I wanted to play was The Impossible Dream. And I got up there to do it. And for some reason, my fingers ended up on the wrong keys. So when you're playing the right notes on the wrong keys, doesn't sound very good. And you know what I did is I just said, okay, now that's how not to do it. And I moved my fingers and I went on from there. I didn't stop. And she gave me a little plaque that says, I had a butterfly on it and said, now your wings are ready. Now you can fly. And
yeah. So it sounds like she inspired you through believing in you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You felt valued because right. You contributed in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to speak to the kinetic thing because I just learned about this and I got a little taste of an NLP practice, but, right. Which is neuro-linguistic programming, and Tony Robbins uses NLP. But there's three types of way that people like best communicate and experience things. Uh-huh. And I don't know if you've heard this, but and so we have a nature about us, and one is audio. Some people are audio. You can tell if you're audio if you prefer like audiobooks over like reading books,
right?
And then another is we're a very audio-ish world right now, though. So just because you do like, I listen to audiobooks, but I only do it for speed. I much prefer like getting the book and like highlighting it and stuff. And then there's visual. So you tell a visual person, because when you ask them something, they like kind of, they might look up and so they're trying to picture it in their head. And then there's kinetic, which is what you are. And that's, they feel things. That's you're talking about empath and you're there's a lot of motion around things. So when you experience something, so if you're asking somebody like, what are your dreams? So some people, you know, they should have it on audio, play it and listen to it. Some people, you know, vision, they should write it down. They should have a vision board. you know, then the Connecticut person, they might have a vision board, but they have to like have the feelings, like maybe the words on the vision board and things like that. Yeah. So I thought it was so fascinating because I do that. When I used to study for exams, I would remember exactly where it was in the book.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one reason why I can tell that I am a visual person is because I still like the feel of books and the reading and seeing the print, you know, I don't really read picture books anymore, but you know, I do remember where certain, when things were have power to me, like I remember exactly where it was in the book. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know what the percentages are, but I don't know how, I think Kinetic people aren't as popular or as you know.
I don't think we've tapped into them. I think there may be more, and mm-hmm. I call it more kinesthetic, or some people use kinesiology to build on it. And I happen to have a photographic memory also. I learned that one day with a substitute teacher in school. But, you know, what happens is, I don't know if you've ever heard of attachment wounds. We came from parents that lived in the wartime. So they were very, very basic, and everybody stuffed their feelings in. They may have been at a point when they couldn't be touchy-feely when we were little. That doesn't mean they threw us in a garbage can. It just means they weren't. Some of us needed more of that physical touch.
And they were uncomfortable probably with the expression of feelings. And so if you started to feel something, they would like say, no.
Yeah. So if that wasn't there, then you can get a developmental, I call it a developmental attachment wound. And it happens to be, I taught elementary school where we had to learn about child development. So I know I was trained in those early developmental things. So when I work with a woman more our ages, somewhere in between, I know exactly where to look, because most likely that's the piece that didn't get the attention it needed. Our parents talked to us, and maybe things had some brightness around us. Chances are it didn't, but that touch may well have been, and it can work easily. And that's how I do my retreats. I do it a very interactive, hands-on. My lesson is built into the physical project that we're creating.
Yeah.
And so as they create, they learn.
Yeah, I see so much of why you were unable to, why you had throat problems, because you were afraid to show your feelings. It's like, that's so great that you've learned that. So tell me, do you remember the quotes, or do you want me to pull them up?
You can pull. I know one of them. I don't know the other one.
Yeah. So one of the quotes that Jill shared with me that she loves, because I send out this questionnaire, and so it gets people thinking about what we're going to talk about. So one of the things that I asked you about is, well, we talk about, you know, some people think it's too late and that the changes are too much. It's like what I have to do to be where I want to be is so huge that I can't even fathom that. So you have this amazing quote that you shared, which is, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single footstep.
Yeah. I think that's an old, maybe Chinese or somewhere back there a long way. And you can also use the eating an elephant one bite at a time. I had a poster.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. And that's it. So much has to do with just taking that first motion. And a lot of people, you want to even say before today is out, do something that gets you in this direction. It doesn't have to be huge, but if it just stays in your head, it doesn't go anywhere. It's just like a monkey chasing its tail. It just doesn't go anywhere, but you have to start. And maybe like me and my podcasting, I bought the microphone. I bought a podcasting book. Okay, so it took me 12 or 15 years till I used it, but it was visceral. I could touch it. I could feel it. And it kept me thinking about it. And, you know, you want to put that out where you're going to see it and trip over it and just keep taking it in as a listener if you can't do it yourself and just keep going that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you shared another one, which I will have to pull up. And that
I can do that one.
You can do that one. Okay.
Yeah. That's from Stephen Covey. And that's called Begin with the End in Mind. And I don't know if you've ever read Stephen Covey, but he's the seven highly effective habits of people. And
Yeah, I used his planner. I mean, that, and when I worked at AOL, they brought I forget, it was the Covey way. I mean, I forget what it was, but he had a planning system, and and they brought people in, and we learned it, and it was great.
Well, you may not believe this, but I actually taught my second graders that begin with the end in mind. And what I did was the very first day of school, I had them close their eyes. And I said, I want you to think about the very last day of school. And at second grade, they'd already been through a couple of the last, and they say, oh, I'm excited for summer, or I'm going to miss my friends, or, well, you know, it's kind of typical responses. And I said, okay, so I want us to live every day of this year so that we create that last day of school when we're all friends with each other, where that's we've amazing. Done a lot of exciting things. And they were able to do it. And actually what happened, it was kind of great that, it doesn't sound great, but we had a kid leave in the middle of the year. And we didn't get a chance to say goodbye for whatever reasons. The parents pulled them out and we never got to say goodbye. And I says, but you know what? We lived every day as if we'd already prepared to say goodbye to him. We'd already enjoyed his company. And so we were kind of prepared for it. And, you know, as I'm at age 67 and I lost my mom 2 years ago, and we even lost an aunt this week. And, you know, you go through a lot of people, those rough last few days and lives, it seems like getting to see too many of those. But, you know, if we live every day of our life so that at that point we don't have any regrets, they say we have more trouble dealing with regrets on your deathbed than the things that you did and maybe got in trouble for along the way. And, you know, what do you want to feel? What kind of a connection do you want with your children or your grandchildren? Is there something in your heart that you want to do that you haven't done yet? And the, one of the things that I did at one of my first retreats was the phrase, the desires of your heart. And we asked people, you know, what would light you up? And so many women, especially my age bracket, they've spent the time raising their kids. Maybe they stayed at home. Maybe they juggled home and kids. And they've taken care of everybody else wonderfully, but they always put their needs on the back shelf. And they can't even say them out loud because there was no room for it. And generations before us, they were just trying to survive, let alone get a chance for their dreams. And that's, I work with recently retired people. And I went, what do you still want to do? What haven't you done yet? And okay, so maybe you won't be in the Rockettes. Okay, but maybe you can take a dance class, or maybe you could be in a local production. I mean, you might have to tweak it a little, realistic sometimes, but do it. And, you know, what would it take? I had one lady in my, it was tutoring her one-on-one, and she says, I always wanted to write a family history book. And I says, she says, I ask her, what's keeping you from it? Well, I'd have to sit down with this aunt, and she's in the nursing home, and she's not very well. And I says, well, this afternoon, can you get on the phone to the nursing home? And she did. She started the book. She was a very scattered, creative person, but I had the organizational skills to pull her in. And she started the book, and she got through, I don't know, 6 or 7 chapters. And then she stopped and wrote a children's book in the middle. But, you know, but sometimes that's that first journey of 1,000 miles with a beginning step. Yeah, so yeah. Can you get on the phone? You know, the aunt was only 20 miles away, even in the nursing home. So
yeah, you never know where that is going to lead, right? Take one step and it could lead somewhere totally different, but at least.
She ended up writing a children's book for the local historical building. And awesome. She has gone to different places and, you know, read the book and promoted it and that kind of thing. So, you know, it did take off and it did go. And we never know which thing's going to touch somebody and start that process.
It's funny you should mention the Rockettes, because my 84-year-old mother-in-law is taking a tap dance class. So yeah, maybe that's what her goal is. I have no idea. Let's wrap up and close out. But I just think you're so inspiring. That, you know, what I love about you is that you've never given up on yourself. You've always been searching and always determined to figure it out and to live your best life. So, and I, you know, the whole thing about begin with the end in mind, so often when we hear that, because I've heard it 100 times, but when you presented it to me, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't think we ever think about that in terms of our whole life. In terms of our whole life, we think about a project. We think about, you know, when I get to that dream, that's my goal. But think about it in as your whole life. What do you want at the end? And that's one of my platforms is I don't want anybody to be in their deathbed, like regretting something they never did. And so, but if you start at the end and you think, you know, when I'm laying there, what do I want to be thinking? Do I want to have like lived and taken the risks and done the things? Or am I just going to coast, you know? So that's so powerful. So what last words do you have for my audience?
I'm going to say persistence and patience. Not giving up, Ben, but it may take a while and that's okay too. So.
Yes. Persistence and patience and possibility. Because there's so much out there, you know, we persist, but sometimes we give up because we think it's not possible. So if you cling on to that possibility, if you want it, it's possible. And so it's just there for you. So you just have to add a little belief into the mix and it's amazing. Sure. So thank you so much for like sending me a message on Instagram. It's been delightful. And I will definitely link up to my episode on your podcast.
Okay.
So, all right. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Not Your Average Lives podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure to subscribe on iTunes if you have an Apple device. You can find free resources and learn what else I have going on at the moment that might interest you on my website at notyouraveragegrandma.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Facebook at Not Your Average Grandma. If you liked this episode, it would make my heart so happy if you could leave me a 5-star rating. You can also add a review to let me know what you like about this podcast, which will help spread the word about it to others who need a little midlife inspiration. As always, be you, listen to your inner voice, and focus on reigniting that lost spark so you can start living your own, not your average, life.